This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Alright, we're on the first day of our expeditionary week. Mike Musselman joins me. We're going to talk about movies before we talk about traveling. And then I have a couple email questions. People sent me an email question, one about what is a stack and how does a stack work, two about throwing grenades. So we'll get to that in a few minutes. But the Gunner's going to go see Mission Impossible. So when you, having the technical background that you have in weapons, are you like a dick at those kind of movies? You sit there, do you make noises, or do you keep it all to yourself and saying, yes, that totally could happen?
Come on, what do you think?
You can't.
No, I don't always point it out. Like, I'm not always the guy that's like, oh, bullshit. But I try and limit the times where I'm like, oh, whatever.
So you just try to live in the moment of the movie and not say, yeah, you know, hand grenades don't really look like 1,000-pound napalm shots, okay?
Those, yeah, that drives me crazy. When you see the hand grenade and it's like it makes everybody flip through the air and there's flame everywhere. Yeah.
Flaming ball.
I lose it.
Okay, just for the record, what does a hand grenade actually look like when it explodes?
It's just a gray cloud. It goes boom, and there's a gray cloud. That's it. It's not sexy. It's not cool. There's a black, if you look really carefully, there's a black little cloud in the middle.
Okay.
But, yeah, other than that, man.
The black little cloud is from the explosive, and everything else is from the blast, right?
Yeah.
It's not
cool looking, man. Yeah,
it's mostly cool dust. It's mostly dust and shit flying to the air. My God. Yeah, but I'll tell you what, if we could get some of the hand grenades that they have in the movies, that would be some shit, man. Well, let's talk about hand grenades then. Can you explain throwing hand grenades? How many safeties are on a hand grenade? And the delay?
Well, now they added one. It used to be, let's see, I remember it because I'm trying to recall, because I threw a couple when they first came out with it. So there's a spoon safety. There's a safety for the spoon.
Right.
And then there's like a little clip. You kind of swipe it away.
There's a pin. There's the pin, right?
Yeah, then there's the pin where you push in and then twist and pull out.
Wait a minute, you don't pull it with your teeth?
Yeah, try that. Tell me how that worked out for you.
What do you mean? They do that
would be... Yeah, I know.
They do that. They do that in the movies all the time.
I know.
Everybody does that though. They like you look at a grenade and you're like, "How would you pull this out with your teeth?" And you quickly conclude,
"Yeah, the metal ring."
Oh shit! Anyway,
I mean, I guess you could do it. It wouldn't be. It definitely wouldn't be advisable. I mean, there's no way, dude.
Yeah, 50-50 shot. You're losing a tooth, depending on you know how well somebody has. As the pin is actually, it's a piece of metal that's bent around the ring, right, and it slid back through, so it's really thin, so it's two pieces of metal shoved together, and then when it comes out the other side, you take that thing and you spread it so the pin can't come out accidentally as you carry it, right? So that's how you do it. So if that thing's not put back together so it's straight, and you go to yank that thing with your teeth. Yeah, there's there's a 50-50 shot. You've got a...
That's stupid.
Anyway, okay. So, and you said they added another safety?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Maybe that's the concussion grenade because people will get hurt with that. But I can't remember. For the life of me, I can't remember what the safety looked like. But there was like another type of safety that was implemented into that. Like I said, I can't even think of it now. It's driving me crazy.
You'll think of it. In the middle of the night, it'll come to
you. I know.
You'll sit up in bed and yell.
No, you're right. It's just going to be like, oh, shit, that's what it is. Hey, you know what started this week?
What?
Maybe it started last week. But Shark Week.
Oh. Where did I see something? I saw something for that.
Let me tell you something about Shark Week this year. I'm not even going to watch a show.
What? You love Shark Week.
No. I do, but
you're a diver.
I watched a little bit of it.
You're Diver Mike.
Oh,
that should be a TV
I
show.
I watched a little bit of it, and it was horrible.
Huh?
It's like a regurgitation of last year, which was the regurgitation of the year before that, which was the And so what they've done is they're like, in season three, this is the shark we saw. And in season four, this is how big he got. And then in season five, and you're like, oh, for crying out loud. Really? This is it? You guys, during the off seasons, you can't get a camera off by the boat. You can't do something exciting. I mean, that's what it's turned into. So, I don't know if he's...
You know, Mike, that's really surprising because, I mean, there's some things that have been built on Shark Week, right? Who did it? National Geographic? Who does Shark Week?
No, Discovery, I think.
Yeah, they built, that's a franchise, man.
Oh, I know. They made their whole life on that thing.
And I can't believe that it wouldn't be great because everybody knows about Shark Week.
Oh, dude, it is horrible. So there's one episode I watched.
Wait, why am I remembering that you said it was horrible last year?
It was getting bad. Yeah, you're right. I did say that.
Whoa.
I was hoping I was wrong, but it looks like I was correct.
You know, that's pretty amazing because I can't remember shit. I'm looking at the flat. I'm looking at a concussion grenade, the M20, the M201A2. Would that be it?
Yeah.
There's
no. Yeah. What about it?
There's two pins in it now. It's a cylindrical looking thing. It's not a round thing. Whoa. Interesting. Yeah. So it's got two pins. It's got two pins. I'm just trying to look. No, it does have, it has the clip, so that would be a safety. So one, two, so it would have three safeties for the concussion grenade?
Two? Yeah, there's.
Why do they have why do they have two pins?
Because guys were being stupid and blowing it up in their hands and shit.
Oh.
You gotta be dumb.
I know.
Yeah, I don't
Come
know.
On, that's really dumb to blow it up in your hand.
Yeah,
I had an artillery.
You gotta try really, really extra hard.
Yeah, I had an artillery simulator. It didn't detonate in my hand, but the Piccolo Pete fired in my hand. Oh, man, that was miserable. It was like fired right in
that thing used to whistle.
Yeah, that thing, the Piccolo Pete part of it. Fired right into my hand. I was wearing, it was in the winter in Quantico, and supposedly somebody threw it and it was a dud. And so a lot of times if you checked it, they didn't do everything right when they primed it. So anyway, I went to check it. When I picked it up, it fired into the palm of my hand, and I had my like green wool glove on.
Yeah.
Melted that thing right to the palm of my hand, and then I had the biggest blister on the palm of my hand, and it was, the first 24 hours of a burn, it's just throbbing. I was like, this sucks. Never play with ordnance. Nobody no. believes that. Come on. We all do it.
No, I didn't. I never did.
You never played with any ordinary?
No, I mean, I never played with it, but, you know, like, I did stupid stuff with it, but I never played with it.
There you go. Just so you know, folks, you can how does Mac know he's lying? It's just, we just have to evolve. We just evolve the terminology. I didn't play with it. I mean, I messed with it, but I didn't play with it. Okay, so.
Yeah, there's a difference, man.
I know. So we know you can't pull it out with your teeth. We know the concussion grenade has an extra safety now. I'm not exactly sure why, because people are stupid. And, wait, what was the other thing? Oh, what's the delay on the fuse of a hand grenade?
3 to 5 seconds.
3 to 5 seconds. Okay. Let's see. What's next? So.
Oh, you want to hear something stupid, though?
Yeah, I do. Then we got to go back to Mission Impossible. Yeah, back to Mission Impossible.
This is actually pretty stupid. This is pretty funny stupid. So, during the war, they wanted to train. I was at a range one time. I popped up into my range, and they were looking to train with hand grenades, milking the fuses. Because, you know, if you toss a hand grenade at the enemy, they're going to toss it back to you.
Yeah, they are.
I said, only if it's in the script, boys. Only if the writer wrote it in the script will they toss it back to you. No, Gunner, you know, I heard it happened to a unit that was operating up north that was dating my sister's best friend's uncle.
That's always how the story goes.
Yeah.
And somehow or other, the
they were, and the, I was literally the like, seals, no, we're not doing seals, that. We're not doing that.
The seals somehow or other normally make an appearance in those stories too. Yeah. Yeah, they were with the, they were seals. Okay. So you mean to tell me you don't pick them up and throw it? Is there ever a time when you would pick it up and throw it, as opposed to kicking it or diving the other way?
I've never read that in the manual, so no, I would.
But you're a gunner, you know all kinds of things. So you're standing there, grenade comes over a compound wall, which has happened, and it lands in the midst of Marines. You can pick it up and throw it, you can kick it, or you can dive on it. Okay, let's take diving out of it.
Or
out of the
way. Can grab someone and throw them on it.
You can grab the dumbest person and help the whole process of natural selection along.
Yes.
Which gets us all closer to extinction, which Mike is extremely excited about. All right. So assuming you don't do that, what is your course of action? Are you going to turn and dive? Or are you going to go kick it? Are you going to yell grenade and dive? What are you doing?
Me?
Yes. You personally.
I would probably kick it. I mean, the problem with picking it up, Mac, is, you know, how long has it been there?
Takes too long, too.
Did it just land there?
You could kick it, or you could pick it up.
If I saw it being tossed, if I caught it midair, yeah, there's a difference.
Yeah. Turn a double play with that son of a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be like a natural reaction, right?
Right.
See a ball flying through the air, you just grab it.
And caught it, and you throw it. Okay, yeah, but if it bounces and it rolls and then it winds up at your feet, that's at least 3 to 4 seconds since somebody threw it. 1, 2, 3 hits the ground, 4 it rolls and hits your feet.
Yeah, in that case, I would probably, because if it was, it would be tough to say, man. I'd probably jump on it.
No shit, man.
You would, I mean, a lot of people, I don't.
Would I jump on it? I don't know. You know what?
It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's hard to say because you have a nanosecond to decide.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's how Jason Dunham, that's what happened with him. He, you know, they as Marines were sitting around talking about could your helmet and sappy plates, could they protect you from the blast? Could you survive? And when it happened, I mean, the The irregular thing about Jason, Corporal Jason Dunham's Medal of Honor, is that there were no eyewitnesses, eyewitness statements. Nobody saw what he did. And he was awarded the Medal of Honor based on their statements from the discussions that they had had sitting around talking shit, I don't know, wherever they were, Alkheim, at the train station in Alkheim, or wherever the hell they were. And their guy said, no, I know exactly what he did, because we talked about it. And interesting. So, yeah, I had his helmet for a while. Craig Tucker was regimental commander of RCT-7, and Dunham was in 3-7, and so they wrote him up. When they wrote the award initially in 2004, Tucker brought the helmet to General Mattis, and then Mattis handed it to me and said, here, Mac, hold on to this. And it became like a little shrine, you know. People heard that I had it, and they'd come around, and they'd say, hey, Mac, do you have Corporal Dunham's helmet? And it looked like, Mike, it looked like a high school pom-pom, you know, the Kevlar. It was like when we were, like, paper mache pom-poms that girls would make when we were in high school. Those kind, that's what the Kevlar looked at. And then as you got closer to the ear flap, it became solid Kevlar again. And so, but if I didn't like the people that came and asked, I'd say, no, I don't got it. Well, you know, so-and-so said you have it. I'm like,
yeah, well, that's not cool, dude.
Yeah. No, the CG's got it right now. Do you want me to go ask him and tell him you want to see it? No, that's all right, man. All right, get out of my face.
What? I would have never done that.
Hey, you're either in or you're out. If you ain't in, don't bug me, okay? And why would you not be in, Mike?
What do you mean?
So
I was always in the in crowd.
You were always in. Okay, but if you get excluded, if you're on the other side of the fence, why are you on the other side of the fence? Because you're a?
Idiot. Yeah.
Thank
a
you.
Moron.
And then he comes up and says, hey, can I see Corporal Dunham's helmet? No, or some shit like this. Hey, where's Corporal Dunham's helmet? I don't know. I heard you had it. I used to have it. CG's got it now. He's down the hall if you want to see it. Maybe it's in his office. No, that's cool. I'm out.
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, so now let's go back to Mission Impossible. Okay, so you're sitting there in the movie. First of all, going to the movie, if you haven't been
there. I haven't seen it yet.
I know. I'm not asking you about the movie. We're going to talk about your conduct inside the movie. First of all, if you haven't been to the theater in the last 10 years, you should go. Because they have couches and chairs, man. You can go to sleep so easily in the movie now. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Honestly, yep. It's sure. Awesome. It's awesome. We would, Colleen and I went up to a show in a movie in West LA, which is like the swankiest part of the world. We had a couch to ourselves. It was a friggin' couch. I was like, this is the best, man. I threw one leg over the side. I'm like, I don't even care what the movie is, man. This is awesome. So,
yeah.
So do you know the theater you're going to today? You know the seating style? Will you be asleep? Or
yeah.
Will you go to sleep or will you watch the movie?
This one I'll probably watch.
What percentage of movies would you say that you sleep through?
Pretty good chunk of them.
Yeah, I'm like 75.
Unless I'm really like,
yeah.
If I'm really, 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 really into it, then yeah, then no way I won't.
If it doesn't grab me, I'm going straight to sleep within 10 or 15 minutes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And then,
definitely, man.
And then you get poked. You're snoring. No, I'm not. How can I snore? I'm not asleep. Okay. So now you're going to sit there, and will it depend what mood you're in, or does it depend how crazy whatever the gun event or the explosive event or I'll tell you what. The other thing they shoot that does crazy things that you see on a regular basis is the law, right? So they grab that thing, pew, they extend it, and they shoot a nuclear missile out of that thing. Like, who knew?
Right.
Who knew? So the law is pretty awesome in cinema, too. So does it depend on how crazy that stuff is before you go, oh, jeez, I can't take it. I can't take it anymore. Or does it depend more about your mood? If you're not in the mood, then you rail on everything. How do you do it?
It's mood. Because, one, I find myself like, why am I here? Because I do not like Tom Cruise whatsoever.
Oh, my God. He's an idiot.
Yeah, I think he is a huge, pompous jerk. So, like I said, it's very, very odd for me to find that I do like him in this movie because, to watch him, it's just painful, man. I'm like going against everything that I believe in.
Yeah, you stand for. At the petroleum club, and I mean, could you get thrown out? Could you get barred from the petroleum club if they saw that you were coming out of this movie? Whoa, hey, that's a gunner. He's barred.
No, because I think it still classifies as an action gun movie. So I think they waived that.
So you could hide behind that. I'll tell you what. I like that. That's all right. Okay. All right. No, I'll tell you what. Cool. It's done a lot of money around the country so far since it's open. So I saw a little preview of it. It looked pretty crazy, right? Free falling 48,000 feet with a suit on.
What?
Yeah, shit like that.
That's this new one?
I don't know. But that's I want to say. But you know Tom Cruise, you'll see him on a motorcycle. At some point he'll jump out of a plane, right? And there'll be guns galore. So yeah.
Well, the thing is, the only thing I have a hard time with the Tom Cruise good guy is the fact that he's a tough guy. I mean, he's only like 5'1". I mean,
you could be a tough.
And he's a Scientologist.
You'd be a tough guy if you're 5'1".
Yeah, but he's a Scientologist. He's a peace-loving. And, you know, I think I saw a thing once on him, and I was cracking up because he plays it in the movie. They add up some questions about guns, like he's a gun expert.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh.
Here we go.
Must be a slow news day. Yeah. We're asking Tom Cruise on his opinion on guns. Trying out. Wow.
What do you know about guns, Tom? What the prop guy tells me? Point it that way and shoot?
Yeah. What my instructor guy instructs me to do. I do exactly what he tells me to do.
All right.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, you know, it's his little lack. When he was Maverick, too, I didn't like him in Maverick because he was a little pompous ass, too.
You didn't like him in Top Gun when he was playing the fictitious...
Or Risky Business?
No, let me just tell you. The one thing that he could never... the one thing he could never come back from is that he was jumping on Oprah Winfrey's couch.
Yeah, when he was getting married to
Katie Holmes, is that her name? Yeah.
Yeah, Katie Holmes.
You know, it's like, sorry, you're not coming back from that. Thought that was a good idea. Nobody put you up to it. You thought that was a good idea. Okay, so.
Yep, you're an absolute fool.
Yeah, you're stupid. Okay, can you explain to everybody what a stack is in terms of building, clearing, CQB, blah,
not
blah.
A stack of pancakes.
not a stack of pancakes.
I was going to say, a stack is...
Well, you can
explain...
pancake
stack in the, and a stack by a wall would be the same thing, though. It's more than one.
More than one. So, first of all, let's talk about pancakes. Do you like pancakes?
Yeah. I like... Well, my pancakes.
You like your pancakes. You know what? One of the things that bugs me most about... I can't eat wheat anymore. But all the things that go in that are made of wheat, right? First of all, you eat toast and you eat, you know, a baguette to eat butter, okay? Butter is the key part of that. If you can't
Did eat, you just say baguette?
Baguette, yes. French bread, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Was that wrong? Did I say something wrong?
Well, no, we're talking about French people. Frogs,
no, we're
French.
Talking about their food, their bread. That's tolerable. That's actually one of their better gifts to the planet. But you do that just to eat butter. I can't eat it anymore. And pancakes with butter and maple syrup. And I don't like a little maple syrup either. I like to crush it. Yeah, I see people that put like a little maple syrup. I'm like, and I see their pancakes all dried out and shit. I'm like, you're like such a pancake clown. It's a joke. So,
I like French toast more. If I had to rank them, it'd be French toast, waffles, and then pancakes.
Waffles you don't see a whole lot anymore because, I mean, I grew up, we had a waffle iron in the cupboard, man. Kathleen would bust that out. Let's have waffle, right? Remember that? You dumped the batter in there and you made waffles. And then waffles, man, you fill that thing up with butter. Butter melts in it. You get all those butter pools. It's a fat man's delicacy right there. But, you know, they're not the easiest thing in them. You need special apparatus to make them, so you don't see them made that often. Why French toast, though? I would rank pancakes before French toast. Do you do anything special? This is a stupid question. Do you do anything special with your French toast, Mike?
Yes.
What do you do?
I use the brioche bread, you know, the real soft, flavorful. Sometimes it's got, you know, or I use like the cinnamon swirl Pepperidge Farm bread. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Yes, I do.
It's like real thick, real thin meat. So I'll put that. And then, quail's eggs instead of chicken eggs. Oh, yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, folks. You're writing this down right now. I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God.
Quail's eggs. Oh, my God. That's a great idea, Gunner. No, I'm just kidding.
Beaver eggs. What? Yeah.
Beaver eggs, yeah.
I didn't know beaver they made eggs. I thought they gave birth to live beavers. No. Beaver eggs. Delicacy. The, all right. So, wow.
Platypus eggs.
So we would do French toast, then waffles, and then pancakes. A lot of people don't know how to make a good pancake. They scorch it, right? They have the griddles too hot. There's an art form to it, okay, to get them golden brown and fluffy and not just scorched and crap. So.
Right.
Yeah. 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 All right. The, would you be interested in this? A 3D, a company, that's located in Texas is printing guns using 3D printing technology.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that. I think it's cool. You know, it's neat. It's cool technology, but I don't know. I haven't seen it, the one that you're talking about, but I've seen some. They're just components, you know, and things like that. But I know there's some companies that are doing, like, the whole gun, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of one right now. It's plastic.
Well, that's 3D print. Well, you know, you can 3D print now in metal, too, so. Not at home, of course. I mean, they're talking big like, industrial-type printers.
Yeah, I guess someday.
Human organs, man.
What? Through 3D printing? Day. Wow.
Yeah. You know, you just put in the blood type, and out pumps a heart, you know. Make sure it's compatible. That'd be crazy, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, just, I mean, even thinking about it, you know, even thinking about it now,
we're trying to think of ways to make humans last longer, and we don't need that.
Yeah, you might want to get involved in the whole human organ printing.
We need 3D. Yeah, we need to shorten human time on Earth. Don't lengthen it.
Yeah, I don't know that you're going to. I don't know that you're having. You're gonna have a whole lot of luck with that. The cultural bias tends to be to live longer. You know, you hear people, somebody dies in their 70s and like, God, he was so young. What? What? Like, okay. Okay.
Well,
maybe not.
What we need to do is get everybody interested in the movie Logan's Run again.
Explain to everybody what it is. Give them the teaser.
Logan's Run?
Yeah.
I think he was like on your birthday, on the age of 30, they launched you up in the air like Skeet and shot you with a laser. So, it was a group of underground people that decided that they didn't want to go like that and wanted to live longer, you know? So they took off. They became runners. And I forget the name of the police. Like, what was their name?
It wasn't.
But they were called something. No.
So the police became the bad
guys. It wasn't like, yeah, pig or anything like that, but it was something.
All right, listen to this.
But it was the runners. Runners, of course, were the runners.
Runners were the runners. That's how that works.
And, God, I can't remember, but it was an old movie, like 1970s, but it was based on the future, which is like, right, and I think it's based like on the future, like, it already happened. Like, we've already passed that time in our past. It was like 2005 or something that this was going to happen. Logan's Run.
The future's awesome because you can make it anything you want to make it.
That's and cool. You know, it's like the crazy thing here, ready to blow your mind? Ready?
Of course.
Tell me when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Hold on. Put your hand on top of your head. Okay. I'm not responsible for your brain coming out the top.
All right, it's there.
Okay. That there is no present.
Huh?
There is no present.
There's only the future and the past?
Yeah.
I've heard that.
Because when you think about it, the present, like, when you think of, like, now is already past, right?
Yeah.
And when you're thinking of like the now that's going to happen, that's still the future. But when the now is happening right now, it's still the past. So yeah. There is no present.
Right. I'm with
you. So you either live in the past or the future. You don't live in the present.
Are you kidding? Okay.
Isn't that crazy?
Because I'm divorced, like I've been on like dating sites on the internet.
Don't say that in your dating site. They think you're crazy.
No, that's what everybody says. Looking for somebody who lives in the moment. You see these lists people put on?
There is no moment. There is no such thing as the moment.
Looking for somebody.
So you want me to live in the past.
Who consistently is present in the moment.
There is no moment. That's what you tell her. Say, you crazy woman. There is no such thing as the moment. The moment is already the past. And I don't live in the past. I live in the future.
I have a couple things I want you to reaction, Gunner. When Cody Wilson first put blueprints online in 2013 containing instructions on how to 3D print a plastic untraceable firearm, gun enthusiasts responded by quickly downloading the file over 100,000 times. It didn't take long before it raised eyebrows at the State Department. Why the State Department? I don't know.
Yeah, why the State Department?
Yeah. What department
are
we?
Nothing else better to do that day?
We asked the question, are there any federal departments that we think are doing a good job? We couldn't find one.
No, we racked our brain for that whole day. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about it. Like,
DOD's doing an okay job. If you take the VA and put it out on its own, and you don't look at any of the bad stuff, right? The DOD's doing okay. Okay, that would be the conditions that we could get DOD, because we like our friends are still working there. We could
but I can't do that. I can't lie like that.
That would be the only one that we would lie about. Okay, hold on. It did take long before it raised eyebrows at the State Department, which then ordered Wilson to cease the distribution under the condition that he was violating federal export laws as download instructions began circulating outside the United States. Wilson would have faced fines and jail time if he didn't comply. Wilson and his Texas-based company, Defense Distributed, have been fighting the State Department ever since, and after a five-year lawsuit, the company won the right to upload the instructions once again after a settlement by the Trump administration ruled in favor of the self-described crypto anarchist. Nice. Okay, so
this is one of those things that we violate, you know.
Okay, I want you to vote in the poll. Do you think people should be able to 3D print a gun in their own home? How are we going to vote? Yes, it's not a big deal. No, making an unserialized weapon shouldn't be legal. How do you want to vote?
I can't vote on that.
Why not? Oh, because you're a federal law enforcement officer?
No.
Then you can't participate?
No, because here's why. This is a trap. Is if you say no, then you're not a Second Amendment guy.
Right. If you say yes, you're a nut job.
If you say yes, you're a far-wing leftist liberal nut job. Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you this then.
Why can't there be, like, hey, let's have a conversation about this?
Because we don't have conversations.
You know, why can't we do that? Why can't we come to a mutual understanding? All right. It's not an easy question.
Okay.
Well, do I think that everybody should be able to 3D print a gun? Sure.
Yeah, why not?
Do I think it's crazy? Yes. Would I do it? No.
Yeah, make sure you buy the right kind of plastic. Because if you don't, that thing's blowing up in your face, and that plastic's going to be all in your mug.
Shoot a real bullet out of a plastic barrel and a plastic gun. Give it a shot.
Okay.
Like I say, you can do anything once.
Okay. So what do you think in the poll, what do you think the breakdown was? Yes or no?
Where's the poll, though? Where was the poll?
The poll was, do you think you should be able to do
Maryland?
It?
Maryland? No, where was it taken? Maryland,
on military, on Military Times.
Oh, then yeah, they probably voted for the.
What do you think the percentages were?
It's probably close, 60-40.
Wow, I'm impressed. 55-45 in favor of allowing you to print. Here's the next, it's only a two question quiz. Will the ability to print an untraceable weapon boost crime or terror? Yes, this is making it too easy on criminals or terrorists. Two, no, criminals won't spend that much money on this product. What do you say? What kind of, first of all, it looks like a single, well, it's got a magazine.
Yeah.
So.
I know what gun you're talking about, yeah.
So I'm staring at it. In this picture, it's got a magazine inserted into a white plastic upper receiver.
Right.
So it's got a magazine. That's, So, this is the kind of essay portion.
Do I think that this is a, here's, okay, so I'll answer this in a couple parts. Yes, I think it's a threat.
So the question is, will it boost crime / terror, allowing this?
You can't put it into the same category. Will it boost crime? No. Will it boost terror? Yes.
I would answer the opposite. It'll boost crime.
No.
It won't boost terror.
No. And here's why. As we look at the emerging battlefields, battlefields are going to be 3D printing capability in the terrorist type of, when we're talking about a...
Right.
Non-symmetric,
What are you trying to say? Why are you stuttering?
Say it's like a non-linear battlefield.
The asymmetrical battlefield?
No, it's not even going to be asymmetrical. Asymmetrical was 10 years ago.
Non-symmetric? So this is non-symmetrical? This is a whole different...
No.
This is a whole different paradigm? We're going to have to get Bill Lind involved?
I'm just saying it's going to be a non-linear. So it's not a straight line.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I'm with you.
I'm just using a generic term. So I don't know what the word's going to be. I honestly believe, like I said, warfare has evolved. We just don't realize it yet. Because we're looking at now things have migrated towards...
Wait a minute. I don't like... Yeah, like, what are we talking about? We're talking about warfare now. I'm asking you a question about 3D printing.
I'm saying I'm separating. You can't put them... crime / terror.
Fucking...
No.
Hey, Clausewitz. Terrorism. Dial it down, Clausewitz. Answer the fucking question.
I can't answer the question the way it's framed.
Because you're too smart. Okay, that's fine. I'll answer it. Will the ability to print an untraceable weapon boost crime / terror, which they lump into one? That answer is yes. Of course it will. More guns in the hands of more idiots. That means
not guns.
Those are going up. Okay, so
not talking about guns.
We're going to answer yes, and you're going to say... Okay, so what do you think the responders to the survey said?
Oh, that was probably a 70-30 in favor of yes.
59-41 in favor of no. Criminals won't spend that much money on this product. Oh.
God, people are stupid.
Okay, next subject. Okay, 3D printing. It's really interesting shit. Remember the toilet seat that used to cost like $100,000 for the KC-135 because the Air Force dudes are up there,
right?
And they're only making seven of them and blah blah blah. Now, with 3D printing, it costs them like 90 cents to make the son of a bitch. Think about it. Yeah, that's 3D printing. 3D printing. 3D printing means that we're not going to have to go into the museum looking. That many times for spare parts. Because we can print some of them. We can make some of them. And now they're starting to do with some metals, as Mike said. That's pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. Okay, here's the next.
That's
story.
The threat, yeah. That's where the threat lies.
Jane Fonda said she's still confronted by Vietnam War veterans over her 1970 anti-war activism and welcomes the encounters. Such moments provide an opportunity to talk, she said, which needs to be done with what Fonda called an open heart and a soft heart. The actress drew bitter criticism. Blah, 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 blah. She said it was pointless to perch on the gun and called it horrible to think about the message her actions sent to soldiers and their families, she said. It was an earlier meeting with U.S. soldiers in Paris that sparked her activism.
Right.
You
know, my viewpoint on that whole thing?
Hold on. At age 80, Fonda looks back on her life in HBO's Jane Fonda in Five Acts from director Susan Lacy, which is debuting this fall. And she said she regrets the horrible message that she sent when she went to North Vietnam. You ever bring her name up around Vietnam veterans?
Oh, I know.
And hopefully there's no alcohol around, which is never the case.
Yeah, I know.
Oh,
but
shit.
You know what, Mac? Here's my point on that. And I know I'm going to upset somebody.
Yep.
Someone's going to call in or email and say this, you know, Gunner, you're off your rocker. But you know what? Let it go. You know, I guess I'm not as perfect as other people that can judge someone for their actions. So I don't know what it would be like or what kind of life that would be, an amazing life that you've lived, that you can judge this lady and say what she's done. That's not your place. Now, you can dislike her. You can say, you know, I don't appreciate or don't respect her. That's fine. But you know what? At some point, let it go. Start the healing process. Let it go. You're not going to be there to judge her. If those things that she did were so heinous and so atrocious, she'll be judged and she'll pay for those. For those actions. But, and like I always tell people, I wish, and I say this tongue in cheek, you know, I always say like, oh, I wish my life was so much like you. And then like, what are you talking about? Cause you're such a judge of first people that your life must be so sainthood, you know, you're so perfect that you can do this and judge other people. And then they finally get it. Like, okay, you asshole.
So you want people to actually live the Christian faith that they espouse?
As they preach,
if
right?
They're Christian.
So they all want to be this, and then, yeah, all of a sudden you mentioned Jane Fonda, and it's like, get the torches and pitchfork and the rope.
Oh, they don't even talk about those things. They like, it's, yeah, they're, yeah, it was pretty,
you know,
pretty
she
crazy.
Was a young, she was a young, she had different ideas. You know, she did something that she thought was right. She didn't do it maliciously. She believed in a belief. And even though it's contrary to ours, isn't that what we fight for? And we defend?
No.
If people have that ability, right?
No, to do that? No.
No, they
that's
do.
Not
it
why
is,
we do.
Mac. You know it's true.
That's not why. She said, interestingly enough, it was an earlier meeting with U.S. soldiers in Paris that sparked her activism, Fonda said. Her belief was that America always fought on the side of the angels, was shaken by what she had heard and what she read. And those conversations sparked her trip to North Korea. But it's pretty, I mean, that's emotional stuff when somebody, you know, obviously, I mean, it's not like she spoke out against the war, which a lot of people did. I mean, she went, I mean, see, that's why I don't know that I would ever forgive that. I don't know that if when we were in El Anbar, if somebody would have gone and, you know, Tom Cruise would have gone and, you know, been seen, you know, taking pictures with chest rigs on and looking at vehicles that were being rigged and, you know, and that were going to be used to kill Americans and, you know, and was having his picture taken. I don't know that I would have given over. I would never stop hating him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just me though. That's just me. All right. I've got another story. We'll move on from Jane Fonda. Drinking age for some troops was raised in Bahrain. It was raised from 18 to 21. Good idea, bad idea?
Good idea.
Why?
Great idea.
You're enlisted guy. That means you're a boozer and skirt chaser and all the rest of that stuff. Not like officers.
Yeah.
What a.
I didn't drink like that. Oh yeah, right. No, because what's missing today is the social aspect of how to behave at a club. You know, and we talked about this. We don't have clubs on Bay Street, or we don't have social engagements where officers and NCOs, the staff NCOs, show junior people on how to behave, you know, what their behavior should look like. So, yeah, so in lieu of that, I think you put every corrective measure you can in place.
I don't like it, and I'll tell you why. If you're old enough to take a weapon and go fight and give your life, you ought to be able to have a drink.
Yeah.
That's my story.
With your wife?
With my wife?
You're where? What country?
In any country in the United States. I think that if you have a DOD, if you have an active duty or reserve ID card, you should be served a drink anywhere in the 50 states.
If you're 21.
No, if you're 18.
No. Nope. I don't agree with that.
I don't care. I don't care if you agree with it.
Alcohol is just a regulated drug that the government controls.
Right. So they deregulate it when you're 21 because you're an adult. But
right.
Are you not an adult when you sign up to so that the country can use your life as they see fit? That's supposed to be an adult decision. And I'm okay with that. If that's what you say, then don't allow them to come in the military until they're 21. Because obviously.
Yeah, I'm okay with that too.
Yeah. And so that's what I said. I said, look, I don't like it being both ways. So raise the age of recruiting to 21. But.
I just don't look at adulthood being able to drink. That's stupid to me.
Well, that's how the United States looks at it. Right?
I know, but the United States is stupid when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Right, right. And I had a woman on my show arguing with me, Mac, their brains aren't developed enough. Okay, then don't recruit them for the military. Do you know the situations we put them in? And then I saw, in fact, I remember seeing an interview done with, I don't know, this 19, 20-year-old Lance Corporal, and I can't remember, I can't remember what fighting he just participated in, and the reporter was talking to him and asked him, you know, about what he'd been through, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, towards the end of the interview, the guy says, bet you can't wait to get back home and have a beer. And he says, sir, I'm not 21. Like, all right, so you can go through all that, but you can't have a beer. Yeah, it's bullshit.
Yeah, that is bullshit.
Yeah, so
but yeah,
we just agreed. I mean, we disagreed.
It the drinking age is 21.
Right.
You can enlist into the military when you're 18 years old.
Right.
So suck it up for 3 years, man.
Well, I mean, that's what people do. Well, they don't do that. They find ways around it, like everybody else has done. But my point is this, like, it shouldn't apply. You can keep the drinking age at 21. That's fine. If you have an active duty military or active duty reserve ID card, right, you get served at 18. You know what that would do for recruiting? Join the Marine Corps.
Yeah, see, I don't want that. I don't want that.
Join the Marine Corps. Let it rip. Like Budweiser,
yeah, I don't,
join the Corps.
I don't want that.
Yeah, well,
not me.
It just doesn't. It doesn't. I think it's wrong as wrong as wrong as wrong can be. The there was one more story. That okay. So let me look into your crystal ball. Remains were.
All right, I got it out.
Okay, remains were returned on Friday. What does that
from
mean?
From Korea, right?
From North Korea. Yeah. Does that mean that he is that this? Are we just a little bit further down the road in the dance and we'll continue to see how it goes? What does this mean? When you look into your crystal ball, what do you see?
I I hope. I mean, that would be really, really nice. I think it's a step in the right direction. But I'm not there yet. I'm not convinced, you know, that something's going to pan out. We'll have to see. I mean, this is one of those, time can only tell. So we'll have to wait. Yeah, we're going to have to wait.
What's the fastest you ever saw anybody get drunk and pass out in your life?
The fastest?
I'll tell you, yeah. Think about it while I'm telling you a story. We tie up in Sasebo, Japan, after supporting Team Spirit that the Midway was supposed to support, but they couldn't go to sea because they're a shitbag ship. So the Ranger gets told, hey, you guys are going to Korea. What? We're deploying in 4 months. Yeah, well, 2.5 right. of them, you're going to surge to Korea because we need another carrier. Okay. So we go up there. After we do the exercise, we're going into the bay where Sasebo is, Sasebo Bay, I guess we'd call. They had protesters in boats that were blocking the way. The Japanese Coast Guard was out in front of the ship. And they, like, blasted him with a water cannon and knocked him out of the way. It was awesome to watch. And so we pull up to the
pier. Where was that? In Sasebo?
Yeah, in
Sasebo. Mendoza?
No, in Sasebo. Now, the problem with Sasebo is it's not like a real Navy dock town. It's like a community. It's like a city, right? So we tie up there, and Marines and sailors, mostly sailors, looking for bars, looking for prostitutes in Sasebo, and it was just causing a disaster. Anyway, that's a different part of the story. One of the greatest punches I've ever seen, I saw in Sasebo. But when you're part of the Marine detachment, you're responsible for the physical security of the ship. When you go into a foreign port, you get a threat brief, and then, you know, you do your thing. So ship ties up. You normally have, you know, different security, on the quarter deck and on the afterbrow. And then you might be doing something on the pier itself, depending on the city. Anyway, so my job as the executive officer was to make sure that, you know, sergeants of the guard had all that shit done, waiting for them to get it all in place. I got to tell the CO of the ship, we're good. In the meantime, they got to let the apes off the ship. Okay. Cause they want to go get drunk. Okay, literally, they are standing there like cattle waiting for the brows to be put in place and the officer of the deck to sound Liberty Call.
Right.
So they sound Liberty Call. So now I'm still in the process of, you know, setting security in the ship, making sure everything's okay. And I swear to God, it could not have been more than 2.5 hours before the first dude came back. On, you know those metal stretchers, Mike, the baskets kind that they use on ships?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm checking in with the OD on the quarterdeck about something, and I look, and they're bringing the sailor back on. And they used to use the forward transfer area, which is where they would move ordnance and shit, from one elevator to another, to put these losers, and they'd have a watch there, a corpsman. But that was right above the Mardet berthing area. So I thought the guy was injured. I said, what happened to him? And the chief bringing him back on says, he's drunk, sir. It's like 2.5 hours. Wouldn't he got the first, you know, cab to the package store, got to the package store, down to 5th of Jack Daniels, and then passed out on the street, and an MP happened to see him. Called somebody and got him back. It was amazing. I've never seen anything like that in my life. So when you hear the term drunk as a sailor on Libo, I've got a great example for you. 2.5 hours in Sasebo, Japan. And then ultimately, because there's no prostitutes there like you would find in the Philippines, you would have got a it would have been a regional destination for prostitutes, because there was so much money to be made, because these guys have been at sea. Same thing in Thailand. It's a regional event, okay? Not so much in Sasebo. You know, Marines and sailors, they're in like Mr. Steak propositioning the mayor's wife. Hey, you go a long time? pardon me? Like, so everybody got their liberty secured. We got confined to the ships. And then there was only on-base libo. Sailors. Nice. So.
This is in Sasebo?
Sasebo, Japan. Sasebo, Japan.
I just remember Sasebo being a shithole.
This sleepy little small town shithole. So we go there, yeah. And then so we get confined to base. Now they're going to, like, so they hire a bunch of bands. They buy, we have a bunch of kegs at this sports complex, and they're going to have softball tournaments. Now all the rec guys on the ship, they get booted in the ass. Now they've got to put some kind of program together because nobody's getting let off the base. And they know they'll have a drunken riot if they don't do some kind of physical activity. But squids don't like PT. So anyway, we're out there playing softball, and there's this band playing, and we're playing in the softball tournament, the barn that it is. And I'm standing there, and this drunk sailor in a cowboy hat looks at this other sailor, and Mike, he punched him, but when he punched him, he like wound up like he was Dizzy Dean, and he dropped his right hand that he threw it with like way back. It's like something out of cartoons. He punches this other dude. It was like a M198 coming from Fresno and hitting in North Carolina. He brought it from. This dude crumpled like a folding chair. Like, oh, shit. And then the Marines were like, hey, sir, should we go over there? I'm like, no. And they had like this huge riot. Sailors fighting. It's actually mildly funny. So, yeah, Sasebo, Japan was not a good time for the USS Ranger Marine Detachment. Fastest you've ever seen anybody get drunk in your life is?
Like you said, I don't. Probably 30 minutes? 40 minutes?
Who? When?
An hour?
Who?
They were doing a beer bong and they put like a fist of early times whiskey in it and drank it in a beer bong.
And how old were you?
I was a corporal.
Were you normally in the middle of that? Because I can see you in the middle of that. I don't know how much you would have, like, participated, but I can see you in the middle of that. Yes or no?
No, I wasn't in the middle.
Periphery?
I was, no, not even that. I was an active participant. I was just going along with it.
All right.
You know, buddies.
All right.
Making sure that they didn't get really stupid.
Were there card games being played? What time does the movie start?
We're actually pulling out of the garage going there right now.
Really? So you and Megan and the lovely and the lovely one are all going? Ready?
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey girls, what's up?
Oh, you're on the headset. They can't hear you.
All right. Well, tell them I said hi. All right, we'll let you go. Have a good time at the movies, and we'll talk to you.
All right. Well, yeah, I got your info. So the next time I probably talk to you. Well, today's Sunday, isn't it?
Yeah, mañana, en la mañana.
So, yeah, tomorrow.
Mañana en la tarde.
All right.
All right, there you have
Sounds
it.
Sounds good.
Michael Musselman,
yep.
The prince himself of all Marine radio. That'll do it on a Monday. So, yeah, just so you know, this is recorded. This is recorded so I can fly. But you have to appreciate, you know, the effort that goes into recording this, yes? I think so. That'll do it on a Monday. Don't touch that dial. More of this awesome program coming up. And this will be a fun week to listen. Because I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen. So, you actually, you know, one of the things you'll get a chance to hear is you get it. chance to hear the Gunner's voice, not through a snarky headset. You'll get a chance to hear it through a microphone, which you'll hear his real voice. Yeah. Yeah, so it'll sound bigger and better, which will be interesting. So, and then we're going to get to hang out for a few days. So, you know, I had a buddy of mine come through. We're Battle Buddies times two last night. And I don't know how to explain it. It's like your one of your favorite sweatshirts or like a good pair of broken in boots. Just feels comfortable, you know. So had dinner, watched a baseball game, shot the shit, talked about leadership, stuff we normally do. But Battle Buddies are the best. Anyway, have a great day. Don't be afraid to export the wisdom of All Marine Radio. If you know people that have suffered from trauma, reach out to them. Talk to them. Tell them you're not getting over it. You'll learn to coexist with it. You can do it. They probably ought to stop drinking because post-traumatic stress and alcohol do not mix. And then tell them to talk about it. 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 It helps. It helps. It helps. It helps. So, on that note, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on a Monday. We are over and out.